The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy.
Yeah. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Therapy for Black Girls podcast is your space to explore mental health, personal development, and all of the small decisions we can make to become the best possible versions of ourselves. I'm your host, Dr. Joy Harden Bradford, a licensed psychologist in Atlanta, Georgia, and I can't wait for you to join the conversation every Wednesday. Listen to the Therapy for Black Girls podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take good care, and we'll see you there.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to Monday morning, April 15th. It's the Monday weekend, week trend. I prefer the week trend. I am Jack, and I'm thrilled to be joined by Brian, the editor.
Hello, it's me, Brian, the editor.
I'm a sleepy guy.
This morning.
Sleepy pie, honey bun. Mm-hmm. It's Monday morning. Miles is still making his way back from Japan. I've been told that he lost his voice at the wedding. So maybe the next time you hear from him, it will be a scratchy Miles Gray.
A scratchy Miles.
Anyways, thrilled to have you here, Brian. This is thrilled the episode where we tell the people what was trending over the weekend. It was a pretty eventful weekend. But we do like to kick off by telling the people what we think is underrated, overrated. Let's start with underrated. Is there something you think is underrated that you want to tell the people about?
You know what? I'm going to be a gracious king, and I'm going to let you go first, Jack.
Okay. Well, I truly appreciate that, gracious king. I appreciate you, my gracious king. All right. So my underrated, there's a New Yorker profile of the woman who took over as like the sanitation commissioner in New York under Eric Adams and is trying to make it so that the city isn't just lined with like snowdrifts of trash bags that are like wriggling ominously with colonies of rats. Just, you know, it's one of those things you immediately get used to in New York, that there are like just giant mounds of trash almost everywhere.
I've always heard about this my entire life with New York, and it's honestly been part of the reason why it's like, I'm like, yeah, I'm just not really interested in going. Sounds gross.
It's crazy.
It makes it sound gross.
Yeah, it is gross. And also it's crazy how much this article made me miss New York. Just like, I don't know. There's like something about the sense memory of, you know, living
sun-baked
in what
garbage.
Smells like a garbage dump. Yeah, just sun-baked garbage. But it's like, yeah, but that, you know, your blood is pumping in a way that it never does anywhere else. But anyways, there's this one anecdote that's like buried in the article that I just had to share. This fucking blew my mind. So I'm just going to read directly from this article. Occasionally, a New Yorker will call 311, the city's all-purpose helpline, to report that they have mistakenly thrown out something of great value. If their trash hasn't already gone in the pit, which is like a giant pit where the garbage trucks just line up and dump the garbage, and then it gets like smashed or burned or, you know, and taken out of the city. But the caller, if it hasn't been dumped in the giant trash pit, the caller is told to visit their local marine transfer station, where the truck that collected their garbage will be tipped in front of them. The owner is given 90 minutes to wade through the muck to look for their discarded item, a protocol known as lost valuables search. So already, just an amazing fact that they set up this like game show where you have 1.5 hours to like, you have like a ticking clock to wade through just like medical waste and rotten banana peels and dog shit to like find your wedding ring, essentially. But then like, there's also this detail that it goes on to say, with surprising frequency, people find what they came for. New Yorkers have a way of recognizing their own garbage. That's my bag, they'll say, making a beeline toward a corner of the trash pile. Over the years, tax documents, false teeth. God, who is doing that for false teeth? Like, that are false teeth? Do false teeth like cost as much as a car or something?
That was my understanding.
Family heirlooms and hard drives have been recovered. Last year, a woman called to say that she'd accidentally tossed out a diamond ring. Department officials told her that they could hold the truck that picked up her garbage. Then they described the procedure she'd have to follow. The woman told them to forget it. And end quote. But just the fact that they are sporting enough to be like, all right, you got 90 minutes. I'm imagining a giant clock that like, the like ticks down like the 24 Jack Bauer clock as you're looking for your shit. Yeah, exactly. But and then the fact that they find it ever is amazing. Like my yeah. first thought on reading is like, no, well, that's absurd. Like they're just pulling a prank on people for having something that they value so much, like way more than anyone should value anything. The person who, by the way, told them to forget it is, I think, the only sane person in that anecdote. But I don't know, something unsurprising about New Yorkers being able to find their garbage, having lived there. And yeah, it's this garbage. It's this article about how New York is basically like a garbage spewing waste factory. That's number one export is terrible smelling garbage bags. And it somehow made me miss living there somehow. Like the commissioner who takes this job usually ends up loving garbage, and that I got it. There's just something, I don't know why. There's just something about New York. It's also like they do acknowledge like ecologically a total disaster, and they're not even trying to deal with that. They're just trying to get the garbage off the island. But again, feels like a game show. Like just how much garbage can we get out of here?
Yeah, they should have like daily, they should have some sort of like a counter.
The garbage counter?
Yeah, like just like yeah. right after the weather on the news, they just, it's like, all right, and we've had 9 million tons of garbage today so far.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, eventually, probably in a few decades, like they seem to be way behind. Like some of the technology they talk about in the rest of the article, New York having is like stuff that other cities have had for years, but New York is just like behind on this for some reason. But I'm sure like in 20 years, you will be taxed by how much like garbage you create, you know, but that will not be starting in New York.
Sounds like a brilliant idea. Yeah.
Yeah. It also, the article just had an anecdote about how that proposed National Rail Workers Union strike that almost happened. If it had happened, like New York would have been choked in garbage within 6 days because the garbage leaves via rail. Once it's dumped,
they have to get it out of town. Like yes. There's nowhere to put it in New York.
So I would also say underrated is collective action, I guess. Like I feel like the media should have mentioned that as more of like a ticking clock that like, yeah, and if they do decide to go on strike, our largest city will be choked in garbage, will drown in their own waste within a week. But obviously the mainstream media won't tell you that shit. You just find out about it as a side note in an article like 3 years later. But anyways, those are some things I think are underrated. Basically, I read a New Yorker article and can't stop talking about it. Brian, what is something you think is underrated?
In that vein, I'm going to go ahead and say what is underrated is city life. City life in general is underrated because, man, I had a fun weekend. Like a fun weekend like I haven't had in a long time. And it's all because I moved back to the city.
You moved from a pretty like rural, kind of idyllic. Like we've seen some drone video that you took of your previous living conditions. I was like, God damn, that is the dream.
I was living on a what essentially was like a private beach for a while.
You were living in a truck commercial. Like the truck actually, commercials where they're you know, combing the beach and doing donuts, and like there's just for some reason we want our car commercials to take place in a depopulated wasteland.
You know, and, you know what I actually did, Jack?
Yeah.
I took my pickup truck, which I had living in this place.
Yeah.
And I drove it down that 6 miles of private beach.
I saw the video.
Filming myself with a drone.
Yeah. It was sick.
And that was very fun to do. And that's the perks of living rurally.
Yeah.
And yeah, they got boring after a year or two.
Yeah. I noticed in the video of the truck commercial you created for yourself that you were wearing Kleenex boxes on your feet for shoes.
Basically.
And you had the back of your truck was full of jars and jars of your own piss.
There was no reason for me to not wear pajamas.
There was
literally no reason for me to wear like anything nice or go out. I was very sedentary to like the detriment of my health, I think.
Yeah.
I was just, there was nowhere to go, nothing to do. And now I'm popping out like literally like 9 times a day, just like getting snacks, going to the movies, I get a little nightcap at the end of the night. I just pop into a bar and have one drink.
Disappearing into the crowd like a bad guy in a Mission Impossible movie.
Like a bus passes in front and I just disappear.
Yeah, you just disappear.
Like I went, me and my partner went out for dinner last night, like this pretty low key place, and just ended up like chatting up with the people sitting next to us. And then we all went to like some other bar. We all hopped in an Uber together and went out. And
yeah.
The stink, Jack, like, and where I'm at isn't quite the level of New York, but just that filth, that grime.
It smells like shit. You know what else? It smells alive.
I do miss it. It does smell alive, like a bear.
Like a bear that is shitting positively everywhere.
Yeah, it's it is exhilarating. There is an exhilaration about just being in like this massive metropolis where where you're teetering precarious, like you said, like, you know, New York has to, they'll be choked with trash in 6 days, or if they're not constantly pumping water out from under the city, it will just be
float
swallowed
away
by the ocean. And it's
float
like,
away into the Atlantic Ocean.
Yeah, and it's like living in places like that, there is an inherent excitement. So I'm like, even though I've never been to New York City, I can definitely see the appeal of like just wanting to be in one of those places.
You're just like a cell in a vast living organism that is like thrumming with life. And you can just that, you know, the thing that we've talked about a lot on the show that can be helpful to people struggling with a lot of the mental health issues where a lot of us are struggling with, particularly these days, is like getting outside of yourself and being in a big city if you can, and like being open to experiences like, hey, those people just said something like that I found funny, or, you know, like they we just like caught each other's eye. Let's start a conversation and meet new people.
The whole reason we started talking to these people next to us at the restaurant was we had just sat down and whatnot, and I was very stoned. And I was just like waiting for food. And I was almost just sitting there like meditating.
Yeah.
And my partner looked at me and I was like, she gave me one of those looks like, you good? And I was like, yeah, I'm high. It's fine. And they just bursted out laughing next to me. And that's how it started. Me yelling, I'm high.
I'm high.
Yeah, exactly.
Might
like
as
that.
Well announce it. All right. Overrated. I think a lot of people were having the same conversation at the end of last week, but we never ended up having it on this show. So I just wanted to mention that I think it was, I was overrating until the end of last week how normal it was that I watched the OJ verdict in Spanish class.
Oof. Jesus Christ.
Well, yeah. Like my high school, everyone treated the OJ trial like it was a historical world event as it was happening. And there's no real clear reason why, but everyone just kind of agreed at the time. Like this,
it was a consensus.
Yeah. We invented the 24-hour news cycle just for that trial. And everyone went with it. My fucking Spanish teacher just went with it. And a lot of people are like, they used to wheel in the TVs.
Wheeled in the TV for this shit.
Wheel it in for you?
I was in, I want to say fifth grade.
Okay.
It was 94, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was in fifth grade. They wheeled the TV in for fucking 9 and 10 year olds.
Like a murder trial.
For a murder trial,
Brian.
I'm like, I shit you not. It was one of, it's a memory that like kind of haunts me. Like, I guess it's mildly traumatic because it's like, it's just such a bizarre thing to have happen. You know, they're, mind you, I'm 10. They're preempting all of my fucking cartoons that I like to watch to show the trial.
Yeah.
So not only, there's nothing for me to turn to.
Yeah. No. Like, it's all OJ. Yeah.
It was all OJ all the time. There was no Power Rangers. There were no, like, whatever the fuck, I don't know, Big Bad Beetleborgs or whatever the fuck was on at that time. But
kids are going to want to see this blood splatter analysis.
But it's funny because it's like, I was a Naked Gun fan, so I knew who OJ was.
Yeah, that was my experience.
I knew who he was to me. I knew he played football and all that, but I never watched him play football. I watched him burn his hand and fall down a flight of stairs in Naked Gun. Yeah. And that was funny to me, and I liked him because of that.
Yeah.
And they wheeled out the TV in fourth grade or fifth grade.
I remember the only thing I remember is just the mirror neurons in my brain because the camera was on his face as they're reading the verdict. And so I was just relieved for him, you know, because I was just like, I didn't want to see Norberg find out he was never going to see his kids again outside of jail. You know, like I just the mirror, like I'm just like, well, you're showing me his face. So I was like, you know, nothing more complicated than just like, I don't want to see this person be found guilty. I'm also not like a big vengeance guy, but, you know, I feel like the justice system doesn't really work. But from that day forward, Brian, I spoke with perfect Spanish accent, never made a mistake about when to use to. And when to use usted.
Did you get any wild reactions from the audience in your class on the verdict?
I don't remember any. I do remember like some of the black kids were celebrating like in the hallway after when class got out.
But, see, I missed that. I happened to have been at a school where there were very few black kids.
Yeah.
At the time, just for this year, which was cosmically very interesting that I got to experience. It's almost like my whole life I've been doing a PhD on white people.
right.
Because so you got to witness I've been able to see them in really unique,
the white fright. Yeah.
Unique situations. Like I've been to Dartmouth University observing white people in their natural habitat.
Animal House was
I was in the Animal House house. My friend was in that frat and I saw horrific things and I smelled horrific smells. Jesus. Those people are running the world right now.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
That's right.
But man, there were tears. They were like little 10-year-old girls crying in class after this verdict.
Wow.
And that has always stuck with me of, just how, how that is just so many things. It's too much. I can't believe we allowed that to just sweep us up so much.
Yeah.
It was like crazy. It was like a Jake Paul fight.
Yeah, it was. It was like, what if your school stopped Spanish and math class and showed you the Jake Paul fight?
Yeah, it's like, it's the only thing I can liken really it to.
Yeah. And we were all just like, yeah, well, I can't not watch it. So
yeah, dude, yeah. Race war.
Yeah, that's right. All right. What is something you think is overrated?
I'll keep it quick because it's been on my list for a while. Duvet covers.
Uh-huh.
Now, it's 2024. We have fucking AI. We can send people to space, but they can't keep the goddamn duvet from bunching up in the cover. And I don't know why we haven't advanced technology enough to have a decent duvet cover. I know this is a weird little rant, but it just bugs me how the duvet meat gets bunched up on one side. There's no way to keep it. Yeah, the duvet meat is always ill distributed, and I don't like
it. Wait, is it not tying? Are you not tying it to the corners, the inside corners?
What do you mean tying it to the corners?
There's like little ties on my duvet cover that you can tie the meat to the cover corners.
See, that's my thing. I'm like, we need like some weird little clips or something, but all the ones that I've had don't have.
You need to get them with the little ties.
But you know how people are constantly like inventing dumb little improvements to pre-existing products? I feel like it's lacking in the duvet field. Like people aren't trying to innovate. Like, Yeah, it's like, you know, that Titanic submarine guy, he was trying to innovate on submarines. He didn't need to. He just needed to build a good submarine.
We're good. Yeah. Turns
but
out,
I'm like, where's that energy for duvets?
Yeah. I think there are like, and this is on me as a as a person with a news show. When I discovered the duvet ties on the inside of the cover, that this was a possibility, that should have been front page news. Like, these are the sorts of things that should be front page news. Is like, they've made a better duvet cover, duvet relationship.
I'm like, can we get magnets or something? Like, there's
magnets
gotta be
are
a better way.
But if you get them wet, they stop working. So that's the problem.
Wait, if they what?
No, that was what Trump said one time.
If they get wet,
they stop working.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
All right. Let's duvet meat is will not be leaving my mind anytime soon. That is what I will be referring to it as from now on. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about World War III and the aforementioned Donald Trump.
Oh yeah.
I'm Elliot Connie and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations questions that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
We're back.
And new World War III panic dropped over the weekend. Iran launched explosive drones and fired missiles at Israel. Again, the media is covering this almost, I mean, this is the main thing that is getting the coverage and not like the fact that Israel had killed two Iranian generals.
They blew up
in
an embassy.
You're not provocative,
bro.
Attack on a fucking embassy on April 1st.
Can I tell you something? Fucking Ecuador raided the Mexican embassy in Ecuador to get one of their people out. I don't know all the details, but Mexico completely cut diplomatic ties for a raid.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you blow up an embassy, they're going to be pissed. Like,
there's
you're
going
not supposed to do that.
Yeah. But like the whole thing, I don't. So like obviously World War III soon trending on Twitter. The nightmare in the Middle East has always been like a war that involves Iran. Biden came out and stated the U.S. wouldn't participate in a counteroffensive against Iran, although U.S. and U.K. forces did help Israel shoot down the Iranian drones. Basically, they completely repelled the attack to a degree that, like, you'd think that they would be downplaying how much they repelled the attack if they wanted to justify the war. But, like, it just seems like it's being portrayed as, like, nah, we, like, basically got every single one.
I think I saw an article that was, like, we literally got 99% of them.
Yes. But Colombian President Gustavo Petro said we're now in the prelude to World War III.
But he would say that, wouldn't he?
Petro? I mean, his last name is Petro, for God's sake. He just wants that sweet, sweet gas and oil money. if I had to guess based on knowing absolutely nothing about him other than his name. But there's also like John Bolton was invited for a friendly chat on CNN and called Biden an embarrassment for not attacking Iran. It's just like this. When you go back and read about the Cuban Missile Crisis, like there has been this contingent of people who, as far, you know, as long back as the 60s Cuban Missile Crisis, they were like, Kennedy is letting Russia and Cuba push us around and just wait and see the consequences of not starting a nuclear war with them. Of course, the consequences were we didn't end the human species.
Yeah. And,
but like we never, it's like you have to go back and like read the historical accounts of the time to really get through just how wild it is that like in a room with the president was a whole contingent of people who were like, we got to start a nuclear war. Well, that's the only logical next step. And in this case, we have Netanyahu behind the switches. And that makes me very uncomfortable. I don't know. But the whole thing is
scary. Yeah, because he's desperate, in a manner of speaking.
And seemed to be intentionally provoking something like this with the, like you said, blowing up an embassy is no small matter.
Like, it was, I mean, something like this was bound to happen just with like, there's, you can't just level an entire, like an entire embassy. City
yeah.
with oh, and everything city. In yeah. it.
Yes.
And there's, it's just, there was always going to be sloshback on this fucking rampage that they're on. This literal genocidal rampage. Yeah. Yeah, like there was always going to be some sloshback, and here we are almost immediately dealing with ramifications of this.
Yeah. I like sloshback as opposed to, like, blowback is the typical like CIA term, but sloshback is more like vomity, and I feel like that's appropriate in this.
Cuz it's so fucking messy. It's just like it's not this it's going to keep sloshing back. It's going to go that way and it's going to come back, and it's just it's not good for anybody on Earth, apparently, unless you live in Patagonia, where the trade winds won't bring the fallout.
Is that right? That's the one place that we all have to move. That's
like the one place they keep saying.
So but this I'm is like, actually really good for real estate in Patagonia. So congratulations to Patagonians. Also, prophecies of 2024 made by Nostradamus. Man, this guy had a lot of time. He wrote prophecies for every year, like up to this one.
That was the great thing about the past. It was boring. Yeah. You had fuck all to do.
Yeah. I think he just, his way of getting high was he would just stare into a candle and then like the visions would come to him. Anyways, all he said, you're going to see people on social media being like, Nostradamus predicted it. All he said was something about a naval war with a red adversary, because he wrote a lot of vague shit that can be contorted to mean almost anything.
Cool.
And
so
also they hadn't invented
red adversary.
Yet.
So that could be China or Russia.
Right.
Or
China.
Anybody with red blood cells.
And if you think about it, they could also be red for reasons that will work out later.
Someone who's
well
read, who went to college.
Well read. That's right. Motherfucker's red. But anyways, you know, take a moment to, I don't know, meditate, do whatever it is that you do to take care of yourself, because these are fucking stressful times.
Yes. And also, you don't have to pick a side.
You do not. Yes.
It's absurd.
You don't have to be like, oh, I'm so stressed out. Which one do I say is the right? All right. Trump, a lot of people talking about his New York trial beginning. I think everybody like remembered the days of OJ and got horny for a big public trial. But before we get to his public trial that actually won't be that public, unfortunately for CNN and others, this weekend, he held a rally in Schneckville, Pennsylvania.
Schneckville,
where he went on a rant about the Battle of Gettysburg, the deadliest battle in the Civil War, in which more than 50,000 people were killed. Trump said it was so beautiful in so many different ways. It represented such a big portion of the success of this country. Gettysburg. Wow. And then he added Robert E. Lee. Robert E. Lee, who's no longer in favor. Did you ever notice it? He's no longer in favor. Never fight uphill, me boys. Never fight uphill. Wow. That was a big mistake. Never fight uphill, me boys. But it was too late.
I've got the high ground, Anakin. Robert E. Lee was Anakin.
It's such a funny take. I mean, Robert E. Lee, kind of Anakin, kind of a fucking traitor piece of shit. But and then redeemed by his son before the Death Star blew up. I don't know what the exact part of the metaphor was that, but the reason, so just, he wasn't super, like, it's a funny take for Trump to be like, you ever noticed they canceled Robert E. Lee? It's like,
he's saying like, that like it happened like last week too. Yeah. It's just
the reason Arlington National Cemetery is where it is because America wanted, like, it is located on the plantation that Robert E. Lee like owned and lived on. And they were like, we're taking this, and not only will you not be able to return to it, we're going to bury all the dead people who you are responsible for killing on your land. So go fuck yourself. How about that? he was not super in favor at the time of the Civil War. People were pretty fucking clear cut about who the good guys and bad guys were at that time. It's just so funny that he's in a place where he's like, you ever notice this guy got canceled? We don't, nobody likes him anymore. It's bullshit. Anyways, the trial.
He should have became a stand-up.
Right? just unintentionally funny stand-up. So the trial is starting today, started this morning. Apparently a number of Trump supporters appeared outside the courthouse, but they were outnumbered by members of the media. It's going to be tough for people to follow this trial closely because back to New York just being a weird place with its own set of rules. New York doesn't allow cameras in courtrooms. Fine. Like, that's not that crazy. They don't even permit audio recordings or photographs. They will allow for about 60 journalists to attend, as well as two sketch artists.
Yeah, this is all because of the Sketch Artists Union, by the way.
Right.
They're like, no, you can't let fucking video cameras in here.
That's right. This is all we got. What if we were still, what if the Sketch Artist Union had stopped the development of cameras? You know, like, thank you, capitalism.
Just like a sinister cartel against sketch artists.
Yeah. But first of all, so no cameras. I mean, I do have to say, as a former resident of New York and now Los Angelino, New York, you call yourself a showbiz town?
Yeah, what the fuck?
This is bad TV. We stopped the world with a trial about a famous person, and he wasn't even a former president or trying to become president again.
Yeah, Robert Blake.
Robert, yeah. That's the big one. But the other detail of this that is like the very weirdly New York lives by its own rules thing. New York makes it nearly impossible to get transcripts of criminal trials because of a rule that transcripts have to be, quote, purchased from the court stenographers who get to pocket the money themselves and can charge as much as $4.75 a page for transcripts.
What? No. I'm so glad I didn't read the doc. This is a genuine reaction, y'all. What the fuck? That is insane.
And like,
talk about a real like union. This is some union shit, yes, right here.
This is strong. The stenographer's union is strong.
Holy shit. He's like, I had to learn this weird ass keyboard. I need to make something.
Yeah. Media outlets are forbidden from sharing transcripts, so they all have to buy their own, and publication is prohibited.
Bro, so I'm learning steno tonight. I'm learning steno tonight.
We're $75 a page, and they like the media can't publish it. So like theoretically, everybody needs to buy their own copy.
Yeah.
And if you like publish it on the internet, like, I don't know, is publishing it on social media illegal? Or does everybody need to like have a hard copy? Like that, I remember, this reminds me of when the piracy panic, back when people were worried that writing music down was going to like ruin the music industry, like back during like the days of Beethoven and shit. Like they were like, these people, like these kids are writing music and it's actually ruining music because everybody's going to just be able to buy our music and copy it off of one another. And so like, you just had to have like the original writing, or I don't know.
That's why conductors were so important. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. The conductors union also massively.
He's the
powerful.
Only one who knows what the fuck it's supposed to sound like at the end.
Yeah. But even so, it doesn't just apply to the media. Even prosecutors and defense attorneys have to buy their own copies of the transcript from the stenographers.
How did this happen?
I don't know. It makes me so happy.
Wow. Stenographers, shout out to you for keeping it on lock in New York.
Like the fact that they're not even just like miking people up and like doing a recording of their voices. They're
just
like,
picturing
nope.
Them out back in the alley right after trial lets out, just like slanging pages.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like it's a trap house. It's so funny.
I got the papers. Who wants the papers? I got the papers, the papers. It's awesome. It's really like, so this whole trial is going to take place in the Middle Ages. Like you're going to have like a written scroll of what somebody heard, and then like drawings of
hand scrawled images of
which I don't know. Again, I respect it. New York, I love you so much. This is so weird.
Yeah, what a weird town. I love you and you're going to kill me.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. All right, let's take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about Civil War. We both saw it. We're going to have a little film corner and other pop culture bullshit. We'll be right back.
I'm Elia Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for deliverance.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune into what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
We are back.
And Civil War broke records for an A24 movie at the box office.
Crushed the record, actually, by a good margin.
Yeah. Made like $25 million or something.
On a $50 million budget.
Yeah. $25.7 million at the box office, $50 million budget. I mean, it has to have like been the most expensive A24 movie.
It looked like the most expensive one. Obviously,
it's all up there on
budgets,
the screen. Yeah.
But, it looked like a big budget action movie, and I was impressed.
Yeah. But anyways, when the trailer for the movie came out, I remember we covered it. We were a little confused about the politics of this like civil war where like Texas and California have teamed up. And they're like, that was kind of the main thing I got was like, there's the Western forces, which are Texas and California. And then there's like the loyalist and a authoritarian president who's in his third term, played by Nick Offerman. I thought he would have more to do in the movie, but he's kind of like just on the margins a little bit. And the whole, like all of the, so apparently there's like four competing factions, but you just don't really need to know that going into the movie, or the movie like doesn't really make it important. It kind of goes out of its way to not tell you anything, like about, like, not choose a side really in the conflict.
Yes. And I found that a very, it was interesting considering what the film is about, but I thought it was a smart choice to not turn it into like this liberal Daily Wire style thing where it's pushing some sort of specific agenda.
Yeah.
It was a movie with a story to tell. And I appreciated that it just told the story.
Yeah. It just focuses on photojournalists traveling through an American Civil War. And I thought, so like, I'm kind of two minds. On the one hand, like, there's definitely a feeling of like you're in an America that feels the way, like the way that the media and movies portray wars in other countries, mm-hmm. like as a sort of abstract backdrop for other stories, is kind of how the Civil War in this movie is portrayed. Like that nobody is picking a side. Nobody's really weighing in other than they want to get an interview with the president before he's deposed, is kind of the frame of the movie. I think it's definitely a choice that, like, the movie, I think, is popular at least partially because we have a authoritarian dictatorial president. So, like, I don't know, they keep being like it has nothing to do with Trump, and it's like, well, that's not true. Like, this, I don't feel like you could have made this movie and had like this many people be interested in it without the fact that Trump is happening, and like it feels like we're teetering on the edge of authoritarianism. But I guess there's authoritarianism happening around the world. Like, there are other controversies, like the fact, like, it got some, it thanks Andy Ngo, that like real piece of shit guy who like wrote a book about Antifa, that's like Antifa is like the main bad guy in history, basically. And Antifa is one of the few real world elements that actually gets name checked in Civil War. We hear about the Antifa massacre, but the movie never clarifies if like the anti-fascists got slaughtered or did the slaughtering, which
I really actually kind of like. I was like, what's the story behind that? I can see why people, I almost think of it like, you know how like Marvel movie nerds are always searching for Easter eggs and clues to like the next fucking, like, it, that's what this feels like to me. Because it's like the movie is, it's so unambiguous, much like every Alex Garland movie. They're not subtle films.
Yeah.
You don't have to like Google like, what did it all mean?
Right.
It's very clear what the film is about, what story he was trying to tell. And really for me, it like all of these questions that people have about these weird little,
the politics,
the politics of it, it's like, it's almost like asking, but why couldn't women have kids and children of men? Like, what's the reason?
Right.
Like, wait, right, why? Right. Why is there no water in Mad Max?
Right.
What was the cataclysm in the road?
Right.
It doesn't make sense to me if you watch the movie, because it doesn't matter.
In all those movies, the bad guy should have been named Trump. And
it just seems silly when you watch it. And it's like, those films are very much in line with this film. They are all sort of road movies in a world that's really fucked up, and no one, there's this fog of war, essentially, I guess, of nobody really knows what the fuck's happening. It's just this chaotic mess, and you're just traveling through this world. You know, it's like, you know, Children of Men, they had those, you know, those advertisements for those suicide pills, and it's like, it does make you wonder,
right,
like, how this came about, but it doesn't matter. This is the world that the film's portraying, and it's almost like some people are refusing to accept the film that they were given, and they wanted something else. I just don't know what that something else is.
The main overall takeaway is like every part of the war feels like the second people are in the battle, you're like, God, this seems like a real mistake. Like the violence, like there's one part where like somebody's out and like they're behind a column being shot at and like scared and crying and like, you know, know that they're about to die. And it like that felt really powerful to me. Like, it's just, no matter what side you're on, once the war starts, you're like, fuck.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who's shooting at you.
Yeah.
There's one of my favorite scenes in the film where some people are being shot at, and you know, one of the journalists is asking all these questions, like, yo, who's giving the orders here? And like, you know, who's shooting? And it's like the guy is just like, just completely dead. Man. And he's like, bro,
yeah,
somebody's shooting at me and I'm trying to kill them.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yeah. 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 Exactly.
It doesn't matter who's shooting at me. They're trying to murder me. That's the,
so in some ways, part. Like that blankness of like what is happening, who maps onto what political ideology is kind of the point. Overall, like I thought it was, you know, I enjoyed the movie. It kind of, the one thing that like, I wouldn't say bumped me, but it has this one scene for me, or these two scenes, the sniper scene, but then when Jesse Plemons shows up, it's not a long performance. I don't want to like spoil it.
No, it's not. But
it is so, it reminds me of like when in Dark Knight, when like Keith Ledger's performance is so incredible that you're kind of just like waiting for the next moment for him to come back. Like,
yeah, because Joker wasn't in that movie all that much.
Yeah, but every really time not.
He shows but, up, but
yeah,
man,
you're like,
yeah,
wow,
it's very much
this
like
just
that.
Like takes it up. Or like Saving Private Ryan, like there's like a chunk of the movie that's not the climax that's so much more electric and compelling than everything else that it sort of feels misshapen. Like, that's kind of how this one feels to me a little bit. But
and the glasses, just, man, there's
the glasses.
Something about the glasses really turned up the tension somehow. I don't know why.
His performance and the red sunglasses are so fucking iconic.
It makes it so much more unsettling. Like,
it's wild.
Why are you wearing them?
It's wild because when we watched the trailer, we were like, everything besides the Plemons, like everything feels a little bit like it's like Sound of Freedom level. Like, I don't know. It feels like it could be a Daily Wire movie.
Yeah.
And then Plemons shows up in the red sunglasses and in the trailer. And I'm like, all right, I'm in like that. And that's the rest of the movie does not feel like a Daily Wire, Ben Shapiro production. It's pretty
strong. No, but the discourse
strong.
keeps talking about it. Like it's supposed to be, which is
right.
Odd to me.
I think the rest of the movie is pretty strong, but the Plemons shit like really stands out and is fucking just one of the scariest characters. Just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Really. So, yeah, I would definitely say absolutely worth your time if you're wondering whether or not to see it. If you're coming to the Daily Zeitgeist for
it's under 2 hours. It's great. It's beautifully shot. You get to see a very cinematic rendition of what is referred to as a microwave. I won't elaborate on what that is, but it's right at the beginning of the movie and it looks terrifying and it's incredibly shot.
Which parts of the microwave?
Showing her like the,
we talking Havana syndrome, bro?
No, like her PTSD shots, like right at the beginning where she's trying to like close her eyes and get some rest, and there's these flashes of past work she's done, and they put the tire around that guy and douse him.
Jesus Christ,
like,
yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
Yo, the I never thought part. I would see this in a movie. Like, this is fucking wild.
That is one of the moments also that sticks with you. Yeah,
it set the tone for the film of like, oh, this isn't gonna be chill at all.
Not chill. They're number one.
They hit this dude with the microwave in the opening credits. Like, basically, I'm like, oh, okay,
yeah.
Alex, calm down. You don't have to hurt him, Alex.
Damn. All right. So let's see. Other pop culture news happening.
What do we got?
RIP Gen Z, Unfortunately, they couldn't handle Sex in the City. It killed them. This is one of the stories that we're just covering because it's a fake story, but you're probably seeing it. So we'll just let you know.
I did see something about this. Yeah.
There's just like a handful of tweets and one article in The Independent claiming that the show is often cringy, which
it always has been.
That from the moment it came out, cringe.
It was the tone.
was like the just brutal clunkers of jokes and
honestly,
puns
it was the charm
from day one.
It was the charm. Like
unabashedly cringe. And that's not me saying, so why are you writing this, Gen Z? It's me being like, this controversy is so fucking stupid. Like, so just because someone's young and says that something feels cringe, like that changes it, even though like that is explicitly its purpose. I think there are some young people who are like, wait, you guys thought this shit was like not cringe? And it's like, no, it's helpful to clarify. That has always been the point of Sex in the City, is like bad clunker, dumb sex puns and jokes.
My question is, why is Gen Z even bothering? It's like Gen Z watching like the Andy Griffith Show or something. Like, why are you here?
It's on Netflix, so okay. That's people just watch it on Netflix. And also, it's like a cultural thing. Like, I don't begrudge them the opportunity to watch it. Obviously, nobody is forcing them to watch it, and I feel like they also understand perfectly well that not every movie or TV show from a quarter century ago is going to stand the test of time. This feels more like it's just a old people in the media who are frustrated with their kids not liking the shit that they like, trying to make a story
Kudos
happen.
Kudos to them for giving it a shot, though, because I genuinely wouldn't have thought that this would have any appeal at all, and they would just like just ghost the whole show.
Yeah.
But they gave it a shot.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's iconic. And I could see people, like even I, as what's the Sex and the City reboot called? And Just Like That.
And Just Like That.
And Just Like That was so persistent even after like the first two episodes that I think we watched for this show, just to be like, wait, there's got to be something here, right? Everybody's talking about it. Like, even I was like, it feels like there's more here than there really is. I can see that driving people to Sex and the City to be like, all right, well, that sucked, but clearly there's something here that's like bringing people back, trying to recapture something. The other big pop culture event of the weekend was Conan O'Brien being eulogized, basically, following his appearance on Hot Ones. Like, my entire social media feed for like 12 hours was people being like, Conan O'Brien is funny. Like, it just, and it was all in the tone of people being like, these kids, again, could be a fake news story because it's a lot of people being like, these kids don't realize how funny Conan is, but that seemed to be the experience. So did you see the Conan appearance on Hot Ones?
No, I gotta admit, never watched Hot Ones.
So I had never watched Hot Ones either. Like, it seemed, while the main take in social media seemed to be, we've all seen Hot Ones, and now a bunch of us are just discovering Conan O'Brien, I'm assuming that for most people, the truth is like the opposite, that they knew Conan and, or at least most people like our age. And like, are just, this was my first experience with Hot Ones. I probably won't be watching more Hot Ones. I don't know. There's nothing like wrong with
watching people eat spicy food. It just sounds annoying to me.
It's like an episode of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, which is a podcast I enjoy, if he was hurting himself the whole time, which is what the idea of Hot Ones is like, you see this person being interviewed while they're like suffering a little bit. That's not really my thing.
I'm not there
I
for
don't
the suffering.
I don't get much. I mean, hell, I didn't want to see OJ hear a guilty verdict. That's how much I don't want suffering. I want everybody to be happy. But he's really funny, and like, you know, it's a great piece of video. I definitely recommend it. But it's just, people are treating it like this is Wow, Conan O'Brien. Who's this Conan O'Brien fella?
Yeah, he's the second best writer for The Simpsons of all time.
Behind who?
John Swartzwelder.
Swartzwelder. Yeah, yeah. And that guy just stayed writing for The Simpsons, right? For a long time?
Oh, yeah. He's got some of the best episodes under his belt.
Anyways, worth watching. Go check it out. Give it the Wood Watch along with Civil War.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
He really, like, he just has a complete breakdown. And when he got home, like, I was legitimately, like, worried for his safety. Have you ever gotten, like, capsaicin or, you know, like, been cutting jalapenos and gotten it on your hands?
Yeah, yeah. I remember one time I was making hot sauce at work.
it does not go away. It is a weird feeling. And he's rubbing hot sauce all over himself.
I rubbed like right underneath my eye. I didn't touch my eye, but I touched like right underneath it. And those vapors started moving up and I was incapacitated. It was like I got pepper sprayed.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. It was a wrap.
In his case, he said that he had a complete breakdown and that when he got home, his skin was literally burning because he got hot sauce under his wedding ring, which is interesting because, yeah, like if you always wear your wedding ring,
that's
the skin underneath it gets like turns into like Gollum skin.
It's like weird jelly like, skin.
Yeah, just like weird thin.
It's like when you don't take a Band-Aid off for like 3 days and your skin gets all weird.
Yeah, it's just like a weird little deformed part of your body.
Oh man, that sounds like it sucks.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah, the part of my finger under my wedding ring is like precious. Don't like when we go outside, it's like, ah, what is, get this light off of me. He said, if I think something's funny, I will do it and suffer later. And that's exactly what happened. And I was worried for his safety during the show, and apparently rightly so, because he was rubbing, don't hot sauce, anything spicy can be, it's like, treat it like acid, like LSD. It can be absorbed through your skin and have the same effect through your skin. Do not do it with an eyedropper, I would say. All right. Those are some of the things that were trending over this weekend. Brian, the editor, thank you so much for joining, filling in.
It's my pleasure.
Where can people find you, follow you, all that stuff?
You can find me in the city.
In the city.
Having nightcaps and delightful evenings.
You can shouting about how high you are.
shouting from the rooftops that I am high. And you can find me on Twitter. It's Brian the Editor, I think. I'm not on very often, and don't bother me.
There you go. A resounding endorsement. You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. That is going to do it for us this morning. We are back tomorrow with a whole ass episode of the show. Until then, whole ass. Be kind to each other. Be kind to yourselves. Get the vaccine. Mm-hmm. Don't do nothing about white supremacy.
Nope.
And we will talk to y'all tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.